The rest of the squadron had already landed when Michael returned to the base. "Mac, I seem to have picked up some shrapnel."
"I noticed, sir."
"Don't worry. Fix it in a jiffy. I haven't fired the guns, but check the sights again, will you?"
50 yards?
Mac asked for the range at which he wanted fire from both Lewis and Vickers' gun to converge.
"Make it 30, Mac."
"Working close, sir?"
Mac whistled through his teeth.
"I hope so, Mac, and by the way, she is a touch tail-heavy. Trim her hands off."
"Suit to it myself, sir,"
Mac promised.
"Thank you, Mac.
Give the bastards one for Mr. Andrews, sir."
The adjutant was waiting for him.
"We have all aircraft operational again, Michael. 12 on the duty roster."
"All right. Hank will take the noon patrol, and I will fly at 1539 hours alone."
"Alone?"
The adjutant took his pipe out of his mouth in surprise.
"Alone," Michael confirmed. "Then a full squadron sweep at dusk, as usual."
The adjutant made a note. "By the way, message from General Courtney. He will do his best to attend the ceremony this evening. He thinks he will almost certainly be there."
Michael smiled for the first time that day. He had wanted very badly for Sean Courtney to be at his wedding.
"Hope you can make it also, Bob."
"You can bet on it. Whole squadron will be there. Looking forward to it, no end."
Michael wanted a drink badly. He started towards the mess.
"God, it's 8 o'clock in the morning," he thought, and stopped. He felt brittle and dried out. Whiskey would put warmth and juice into his body again, and he felt his hands begin to tremble with his deep need for it. It took all his resolve to turn away from the mess and go to his tent. He remembered then that he hadn't slept the previous night. Biggs was sitting on a packing case outside the tent, polishing Michael's boots, but he jumped to attention, his face expressionless.
"Enough of that," Michael smiled at him. "Sorry about last night, Biggs. Bloody rude of me. I didn't mean it."
"I know, sir," Biggs relaxed. "I felt the same way about the Major."
"Biggs, wake me at 3. I've got some sleep to catch up on."
It was not Biggs who woke him, but the shouts of the ground crews, the sound of running men, the deep, belling tone of the anti-aircraft guns along the edge of the orchard, and the roaring overhead of a Mercedes aircraft engine. Michael staggered out of his tent with tousled hair and bloodshot eyes, still half asleep.
"What the hell is happening, Biggs?"
"A hand, sir, cheeky blighter, beating up the base."
"He's pushed off again!"
Other pilots and ground crew were shouting amongst the trees as they ran to the edge of the field.
"Didn't even fire a shot. Did you see him? An albatross, blue with black and white wings. The devil almost took the roof off the mess. He dropped something. Bob's picked it up."
Michael ducked back into the tent and pulled on his jacket and a pair of tennis shoes. He heard two or three of the aircraft starting up as he ran out of the tent again. Some of his own pilots were setting off in pursuit of the German interloper.
"Stop those men from taking off," Michael yelled.
And before he reached the adjutant's office, he heard the engine switched off again in response to his order. There was a small crowd of curious pilots at the door, and Michael pushed through them just as the adjutant untied the drawstring that closed the mouth of the canvas bag that the German machine had dropped. The chorus of question and comment and speculation was silenced immediately as they all realized what the bag contained. The adjutant gently ran the strip of green silk through his fingers. There were black-rimmed holes burned through it, and it was stained with dried black blood.
"Andrew's scarf," he said unnecessarily, "and his silver flask."
The silver was badly dented, but the Cairngorm stopper gleamed yellow and gold as he turned it in his hands, and the contents gurgled softly. He set it aside and one by one drew the other items from the bag. Andrew's metal ribbons, the amber cigarette holder, a spring-loaded sovereign case that still contained 3 coins, his pigskin wallet,
The photograph of Andrew's parents standing in the grounds of the castle fell from the wallet as he turned it over. "What's this?" The adjutant picked out a buff-coloured envelope of thick, glossy paper sealed with a wax wafer. "It's addressed," he read the face of the envelope, "to the pilot of the yellow SA-5A. The adjutant looked up at Michael, startled. "That's you, Michael. How the hell?" Michael took the envelope from him and split the seal with his thumbnail. There was a single sheet of the same first-quality paper. The letter was handwritten, and though the writing was obviously continental, for the capitals were formed in Gothic script, the text was in perfect English. "Sir, your friend, Lord Andrew Killigan, was buried this morning in the cemetery of the Protestant Church at the Wye. This Jagdstaffel accorded him full military honours. I have the honour to inform you, and at the same time also to warn you, that no death in war is murder. The object of warfare is the destruction of the enemy by all means possible. I look forward to meeting you. Otto von Greim. Chester 2, near Douai." They were all looking expectantly at Michael as he folded the letter and thrust it into his pocket. "They recovered Andrew's body," he said quietly, "and he was buried with full military honours at Douai this morning." "Bloody decent of them," one of the pilots murmured. "Yes, for Huns, that is," said Michael, and turned towards the door. "Michael," the adjutant stopped him. "I think Andrew would have wanted you to have this." He handed the silver hip flask to Michael. Michael turned it slowly in his hands. The dent in the metal had probably been caused by the impact, he thought, and he shivered. "Yes," he nodded. "I'll look after it for him." He turned back to the door and pushed his way through the group of silent officers.